This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
You're listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Keyboard Kimura podcast here on Province Sports Radio. I am your host, E. Spencer Kite. No Paul Chapman this week. I know I teased it earlier with Patrick saying perhaps we would get Chappie on for the first time in 9 months so that the lead-in intro that says with your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite, was correct for the first time in close to a year now, but no response from Chappie. He is a busy man running two newspapers. So I've reached across the pond to my good friend, Simon Head from The Sun Newspapers in England to join me to talk just about a bunch of different stuff that's going on. They've got a new TV deal overseas with BT Sports. There is a very large event featuring a prominent British fighter coming up in a couple of months, and he's got a new show to plug as well. So Simon, thank you for doing this, man, and doing it on short notice at that.
That's all good. You caught me watching the Olympic hockey. It's currently 20 past one in the morning here in the UK, and I'm still awake, and as long as we don't wake up the wife, all's well. So it should be good.
The way this worked is I saw you on Twitter and was like, hey, I haven't talked to Si. We've got a bunch of stuff we can talk about. Let's see what he's doing since he's up.
Let's do it. It keeps me off the streets. That's you know, it's all good news. No, it's good to talk to you.
It is good to talk to you as well. You will be making the trip this way on Monday to cover UFC 202 in Las Vegas. But before we even get to any of that and touch on that show, I wanted to talk yourself and Chamath Kersandu have a fabulous podcast, the BritPack MMA. That you started a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that has been a central topic for you over your first three shows has been this new deal between the UFC and BT Sports, which is really just a continuation of the deal that they've had in place for the last couple of years. I've listened to the show. For people that haven't, guys, it's very similar to the deal that the UFC has with TSN here in Canada. Full coverage. It's very much like we have with Fight Pass and Fight Network carrying some of the prelims at the same times. So the guys like me that don't like watching commercials can just keep watching Fight Pass. But Si, I know when you guys were setting this up, this to you felt like the right decision for them to keep that continuity, to not force consumers to switch again. How has the first couple of weeks been? And do you see this as the right move for the UFC long term?
It's a tricky one because I've been kind of flip-flopping on this, because there's two main drivers when you take a look at the two options. The option that the UFC have gone with is BT Sport. The other option that was with Sky Sports, which is a much, much bigger sports broadcaster. They're the UK equivalent of Fox Sports, basically, in the UK. So they're huge. They've got five numbered 24-hour sports channels. They've got a sixth, which is dedicated to Formula One. And then they've got a seventh, which is a 24-hour rolling news channel. Imagine SportsCenter on a loop,
right,
for the entire day, but they're constantly dropping new pieces of news in throughout the day. And they use that to really promote everything that's coming up on all their channels. So when they've got live pay-per-view boxing, they'll show the weigh-ins, they'll show the media day best bits, they'll show bits from the open workouts and all this sort of stuff. And my theory was, to have the UFC on there, when people are tuning in, because Sky Sports News is a weird channel, right? So if there's nothing on TV, and despite the plethora of channels you can get, you can flick through and there's nothing of any substance on.
Right.
So you put Sky Sports News on and you can easily lose 3 hours just sitting there watching basically the same stuff on loop for 3 hours. And it's kind of weird. I don't know. It's some sort of weird hypnotic thing. You've got scrolling ticker along the bottom with all the headlines. You've got the league tables down the right-hand side of the screen. And you've got the action in front of you. So it's kind of bizarre how it draws you in. But what it does do, it cross-sells sport brilliantly. So if you're there to watch, say you've turned on to specifically watch Jose Mourinho's press conference for Manchester United, and it isn't quite time to show that yet, and they're showing, right, coming up next, we've got Jose Mourinho's press conference. But first, here's Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz going nose to nose at the press conference. You might not, you know, you might not have had any interest in Conor McGregor or Nate Diaz before then, but you start to see this stuff. It starts to get into your consciousness almost by osmosis, right? And you, eventually, a character or a particular person will stand out to you, and you go, "I want to watch this person fight." Or in the case of McGregor, with some people, including half the WWE universe, as they like to call themselves, "I'd like to watch that guy get his head kicked in." So, and either way, it results in someone watching, and that's kind of what they want. But it didn't go with Sky. Sky, I think, would have offered the biggest growth. I think they've certainly got the biggest reach, and they're the established leader in sports broadcasting in the UK. Instead, the UFC went with BT Sport, and it was a real toss-up, as I was saying. Do you want maximum growth, or do you want stability and continuity? So as an example, if you want to get as many people as possible to watch your products, and you're choosing between these two platforms, you go with Sky. It's an absolute no-brainer. But what you're also asking to do, what you're also asking all the UK existing fans to do, is basically up sticks from BT and buy new subscriptions with Sky that they may not already have. So, which is more expensive as well. So you're asking the existing fans to part with more cash in order to carry on watching your product. Carrying on with BT, everyone stays where they are. And you're keeping the existing fan base happy. You're giving them more fights, because the stuff that was basically, when the UFC did a deal with BT Sport, initially the terminology said that it was going to be everything that's on US television. Back then, that was everything. Then they launched Fight Pass, and they started creating these events in Asia and also in Europe, including the UK. And these shows and these events, BT Sport didn't have the rights to show them. So here we are, the UFC's UK broadcaster doesn't have the rights to show the UFC event in the UK. So the UFC would put those events out to tender, and you have to buy extra rights to get them effectively. So and BT managed to negotiate to get some of those. They didn't get all of them. Whether they just didn't want them all or not, I don't know. But you had this weird situation where fans didn't always know what channel the fights were on. Under the new deal, everything is on BT Sport. It's a catch-all deal. You mentioned about Fight Pass over where you are in Canada. So do you get the situation where Fight Pass are now showing the TV prelims as well?
So for some shows we do, and it's some people are probably going to be like, why does he have this guy from the UK on talking about their TV deal? But anybody that lives here in Canada that has gone through what we have gone through over the last couple of years of shifting to TSN recognizes that a lot of it are parallels. So for some events, mostly the televised shows, and some of the pay-per-views as well, we get Fight Pass prelims, and then it carries over onto the televised prelims. You can watch them. You can pick between watching them on television on the Fight Network or on Fight Pass. So for last weekend's show in Salt Lake City, you could watch on either platform. But in the past, it was very similar to what you're saying, where there would be instances where you didn't have access to it if you didn't have Fight Pass or you didn't have a specific channel, which just seemed like such a catastrophe and such a mistake. There is still some of the, as you were talking about, uncertainty of what channel it's on, because the deal is currently with TSN in this country, and there are five channels across the country that sort of shift regionally. And so you never know if it's on TSN proper or TSN2 or TSN5. And it just so happens that most of the time there's another live sporting event before a UFC card kicks off on those channels. So you're often waiting for an MLS game to finish or overtime of the Canadian Football League to run through, or there's been some NASCAR events, there's been some truck racing. And so it's a very similar situation to what you guys have dealt with for the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, that sounds kind of similar. I mean, we don't get too much of a problem with the overrunning events that are beforehand, because obviously for us, the UFC events are in the dead of night. Right. I think there was one notable example where we had like the Caribbean 2020 cricket. And I think the only viewing figures that they must have had for that were the UFC fans tuning in.
Right.
Thinking, why am I watching Caribbean 2020 cricket when, you know, the prelims are already underway? So, but the golden rule in TV is you never cut away from a live broadcast. You finish it first, right, and then you move on and you go into events in running, so to speak. But yeah, we now get TV prelims on Fight Pass every show as of now. So as of Salt Lake City, which was the first show on the new deal, if you got Fight Pass in the UK, you get the Fight Pass prelims, stands to reason, and then you get the TV prelims on Fight Pass as well. So you get the option of choosing, as you said there, do you want the ad breaks or do you not want the ad breaks? Right. Do you want to watch the walkouts or do you want to watch an advert for, I don't know, sanitary towels or something, whatever they show in the middle of the night, you know? So, it, you know, whatever it could be, but people now have the choice. But the key thing for us is we get all the events in one place now. BT Sports show all the TV prelims and all the main cards for every show. And, of course, we don't have pay-per-view over here,
right,
for UFC. You pay your subscription, you get the lot. And I know people sometimes complain a little bit over here about us being the poor relations, but TV-wise, we don't do that bad.
Yeah, TV-wise, you do okay. I'm sure there are a lot of people that are now throwing a fit, saying, what do you mean they don't have pay-per-view? They just get it all. Listen, it's the way it goes. Every market is different. One of the things I definitely wanted to touch on with you, because I know yourself and Sandhu talked about it a bunch on your show, is some of the shoulder programming and the struggles that BT Sport has had with some of the shoulder programming. It's something I've talked about for TSN in this country. And I say this with all due respect to the guys at the Fight Network that do a very good job. It's just not a channel that everyone has. It's not as available. It's not as big as TSN. And so I know with BT, they've struggled. We just started getting the pre-fight and post-fight shows that are produced by Fox on TSN in the last couple of months. They've obviously helped make the sort of fight day and fight night experience a little bit more robust. But for you, can you point to anything? Is there anything specific that you look at and say, this is what has caused it to struggle? This is why it doesn't necessarily take. And what is it, if anything, they can do to sort of improve that and turn that shoulder programming into something more beneficial for the UK market?
Yeah, honestly, it's quite easy. This is actually quite easy. And it's been something that's been a source of great frustration to me that it hasn't been looked at yet in 3 years. First off, they created this magazine show called Beyond the Octagon, and which went through an awful lot of different iterations. But at its heart, it was basically a very slow, imagine Ultimate Insider, but with no pace. It's and set in a studio most of the time. That's how it started. But there were some interesting things in there, lots of introductory features, some of the VT stuff they did. It's all brilliantly produced. Like, technically, it's outstanding.
Right.
It's just it's the wrong content. People want to see knockouts. People want to see action. The thing that turns people onto the UFC, you think back to the first time you ever watched mixed martial arts and you went, wow, I want to watch more of this. It wasn't because you had some mean and moody montage with a voiceover.
It was because Gerard Bordeaux kicked Tele Tule's teeth into the front row.
There you go. Exactly. It was something that you pick up the phone and say, did you just see that? And that's, no one did that with Beyond the Octagon. And because even when Conor McGregor told Chad Mendes, I'll rest my balls on your forehead, barely anyone was watching.
Right. I remember you guys talking about it and the ratings for the show was almost nil. And it happened to be one of the largest clips on YouTube in that span.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest failing, even if you don't go into the details with the format of the show, the scheduling was catastrophically ill thought through, because they scheduled it against Champions League soccer. And in the UK, soccer is the end-all, be-all of sport. And the Champions League on a Wednesday night and a Tuesday night, the games kick off at 7:45 p.m. And they run all the way through. The coverage runs all the way through till 10. Beyond the Octagon used to go out at 9 o'clock on a Thursday. And on a Wednesday. And it's like, well, what do you expect? You know, don't run it against one of the most watched things on British television and expect it to perform. And so you know, there were issues with the scheduling as well. I don't know how familiar you are with English television or how familiar you are with English soccer, but there's a very, very famous TV show here in the UK called Match of the Day. It's an institution. It's on about 10:20 on a Saturday night, and it shows the highlights and all the goals from the day's Premier League games.
Right.
This program's been running since 1964, I believe. and it is a national institution. The theme tune has not changed in all that time. They tried to change it once and there was a national outcry. But the thing about the show was there's no messing about. You go on, you've got a presenter and a couple of pundits.
Right.
But basically
Guy says, here's the goals, and you watch the goals.
Here's the game of the day. Bang, in you go. 10-minute highlight package. What I think we need in the UK is the equivalent of that. We don't need voiceovers. We don't need music montages, unless you want to do one at the end. We want live action as it was at the time. Link it together with a bit of music and some captions, throw in a bit of social media graphics if you want. And if you want to do it on the cheap, you don't even need to have punditry if you don't want to. You can drop in the sound bites from the post-fight, from the backstage interviews with Megan. You could quite easily create a nice, fast-paced 30 to 45-minute show showing all the best knockouts, the real wow moments of the event.
And put it on a Tuesday where people will actually potentially tune in and pay attention.
Yeah, you stick it on at a time where people will watch it and it makes sense. Ideally you'd have it on a Monday or a Tuesday, so it's relatively fresh. But you know you'd have to be careful you don't schedule it against a Monday night Premier League game. But the actual format is easy. Give people action and they will watch it. And you know, especially when the sport's on in the middle of the night, people aren't always going to have the time to sit through 6 hours worth of fights on a Monday night, because that might be the earliest opportunity they get if they're working and they're doing, you know, they've got family stuff on a Sunday. They might not be able to get to sit down and watch the fight. So to have a proper all singing, all dancing, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, here's everything you didn't see, with all the reaction.
Right. A catch all to catch you up on.
Yeah, you on could even what drop just a bit transpired. Of stuff. Yeah. And for me, that is, I'm not a TV person. I worked at BT Sport for 2 years when they launched. But that was as a journalist. I'm not a television person. I just think that's such an easy win for them. Whether they do it or not remains to be seen. I don't know. They didn't do it the first 3 years, but hopefully under the new deal there might be a little more encouragement to sort of be a bit more innovative. So fingers crossed, because what they did before, people just didn't watch it. If people aren't watching it, then you know you're failing. So that, you know, people would stay up in their tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in some cases to watch UFC shows live in the middle of the night, but they couldn't attract anybody to watch it prime time in midweek. And that's, you know, there needs to be alarm bells ringing when that happens.
As someone that moaned about getting up to watch the odd show from Macau or Singapore at 4 a.m. and got strange looks from my wife, who thought I was a crazy person, it amazes me the diligence and effort you guys over there put in to being up throughout the evening, most Saturdays and the occasional Sunday, to cover this sport. It makes what we do over here in North America look like child's play, because y'all are doing it on no sleep, little sleep, crazy hours when your body doesn't want to be awake. So it's impressive to see, and it is impressive to know the effort you guys put in, because you put it, like, coming over here must feel like just a walk in the park.
Oh, it's awesome. You know, whenever I'm over, the things that always make me grin. When I'm staying in Vegas for a fight week, and you put the TV on, and it could be like 10 o'clock in the morning, and they're showing UFC content, and you're like, this is how it should be, right. And you've got the plethora of sports discussion shows that all seem to be pretty much the same. They just interchange the people.
Select a topic, pick which side you want to say is right, and yell at each other.
Don't get me wrong. I love watching them, but the fact that they'll talk about a big story in MMA alongside a big story from the NBA or a big story from the NFL, that to me is great. And it's, it's almost like I'm when I travel to the States to watch this stuff, it's almost like I'm traveling in time. I'm traveling forwards a bit.
This is what I want to see.
I'm hoping we might get this one day, but in the means, obviously the time change, we can't do too much about. And by the way, the Saturday nights are easy compared to those few times where they did some on Wednesdays. They can stop with those. We don't want Wednesday night through the night shows are not helpful for us Euro guys. I think developmentally we're catching up in terms of the fighters. Right. Media wise, I think we're gradually waking up to the sport. Television wise, I think we've still got some ways to go, even considering the time zone issue, which you can't change the solar system, can you?
Well, apparently not. It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite, Simon, head of the Sun Newspaper Group in the UK, talking about the new BT Sport TV deal, very similar to a lot of things that we have here in Canada in terms of the TSN deal. A lot of the same feelings that I have and have had conversations, as you have with James Elliott, I have with Tom Wright over here, just about the influence and the importance of having those programs and having them be discussed. And it's funny you mentioned some of the ESPN stuff where you see, or the Fox stuff as well, to a lesser extent, where you see talking heads talking about the main stories. I know one of the head scratchers for me is that going into a big UFC weekend, and it will be interesting to watch next week as we get ready for UFC 202, whether there is daily promotion of this event and whether there are daily stories about Conor McGregor and about Nate Diaz. I remember last year going into Ronda Rousey's fight with Kat Zingano in Los Angeles, big promo package as a commercial for before Ronda Rousey takes on Kat Zingano, the prelims are on TSN, whatever. And then it cuts to the last 10 minutes of their flagship show, Sports Center, which is basically, as you know, a news program promoting everything that's going on, highlights, things like that. And there was no mention of Ronda Rousey or UFC 184 or anything that was taking place. And it just seemed like such a wasted opportunity to me. And hopefully we start seeing more of that. We have a little bit. I know Robin Black did a live feed from the Ottawa show last month. I assume there will be a little bit more coverage coming up in a couple of weeks when they come out here for UFC on Fox 21 in Vancouver. But I understand. I feel your pain. I feel the challenges. Anybody that likes the sport and loves the sport and follows the sport here in Canada understands those frustrations you're experiencing with BT in terms of the magazine shows and the shoulder programming and covering our sport, the sport that we love, the way that we see these other sports covered so effectively and so efficiently and so successfully throughout the years. It's frustrating to wonder why it can't just be transferred over to MMA and the UFC.
I'll take off my ranting trousers or ranting hats because I'm not taking trousers off on a podcast. By the way, it's very late here, so if I'm coming across a little bit weird,
no, you're good.
I'm very tired. But all joking aside, one of the biggest things to bear in mind: the first British fighter in the UFC to compete for a world title was a chap by the name of Dan the Outlaw Hardy. Who's gone on, obviously his health issues have meant that he's no longer able to fight. He's now one of the best analysts in the game. He's a superb co-commentator. Him and John Gooden have got a really good thing going. I understand they're very popular on your side of the pond. They seem to get rave reviews over there.
John has been on this show a couple of times.
And he's a great guy. He's top man, is John, as is Dan. But you think the experience that Dan's got and the ability that he has and the fact that he's an excellent analyst, he's never been used on right. BT Sport. John and Dan have never really been used, and certainly not as a pair. And they're doing all this fantastic stuff on YouTube. You know, the fact that we've got, obviously, the other Brit to fight for a world title is currently holding one, and we're going to talk about him in a bit. And he's kind of busy right now, so we can't use him. We can't use Michael Bisping. But Dan Hardy, he's in the country. He's available.
Right.
Why is he not?
They're looking for opportunities.
You know what I mean? He should be the face of... the face of the coverage. He really should, and he's not really ever been on, which is laughable, really. And fingers crossed we start to see more of him and John as well on our screens, because they're the best in the business over here, and they need to be given that platform.
Well, and they're amongst the best in the business, and I don't say that just because there's only a handful of commentary groups. They are two of the very best across this entire sport at what they do. They are a phenomenal pair. And in seeing, you know, Joe Rogan talk about in the last couple of weeks, re-signing his deal, but backing away from a number of events and mostly just doing pay-per-view events going forward, you hope that there are some opportunities for John and Dan outside of even just those UK shows that they, and the European shows that they traditionally do, some of which have gone to John Anik this year as they've put them on Fox Sports 1. So I agree with you. It's the same thing I feel about TSN and whether it's using Robin Black from the Fight Network, who people absolutely love. He's now doing stuff for UFC.com with his breakdowns as well. Or, you know, reaching out to some of these retired Canadian UFC fighters. Mark Hominick was great on Sportsnet before the television rights shifted, getting some of them back. Patrick Cote does a phenomenal job on RDS, the French language sports network here. You could put him on TSN and he would be outstanding in that role as well. So I agree with you. I hear what you're saying, and you set me up nicely for a segue by mentioning the other Brit to fight for and now currently hold a world title, who will be defending that belt at home in Manchester against Dan Henderson at UFC 204, Michael Bisping, on October 8th. It's a fight that I don't think it's 100% been officially declared that it's happening by the UFC yet. I know you guys are sort of get bothered every day about when's it official, when's it official, when's it official. But Michael Bisping has been on his show and said, look, this is what's happening. Some other people have said, look, this is what's happening. So we all assume this is what's happening. I've talked about it on this show with a few different people, but now is my first opportunity to talk to a Brit about it. Good or bad that Michael Bisping's first title defense is against number 13 ranked 45-year-old Dan Henderson?
That's a very open question, and I'll explain. I'm okay.
You're allowed to say both. We hedge on this show all the time.
I don't want to completely cop out, but if you're Michael Bisping, this is great. This is the fight he wants. Dan Henderson is the number one mark on his record that he would love. I mean, he's never going to erase that mark on his record, but he can certainly exact some revenge for what happened at UFC 100. So for him, this is perfect for him. Now, I'm one of these people who I'm a little bit old school in terms of when it comes to combat sport, and whether it's boxing, kickboxing, or MMA, as we're talking here, I want to see the best people fighting the best people, and I want to see the championship contested by the most deserving guys. And if we're being really honest here, Jacare Souza should be fighting Michael Bisping. Unfortunately, and I'm sure this is one of the reasons, Jacare, really, outside of Brazil, probably doesn't sell too many tickets. Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping will sell a boatload of tickets. There's a narrative there. There's a storyline there, and it makes sense. What it also does for the UFC, Dan Henderson, I think, has been hoping for the UFC to give him a job,
right?
So that he can hang up the gloves but continue to be gainfully employed by the UFC and can continue on that way. And I'm not sure if that's going to happen, because I would have thought it would have happened by now.
Right. If they were going to do it, they would have given him the Matt Hughes treatment or the Chuck Liddell treatment, where it's, all right, why don't we walk you over here and put you in this corner office where you show up a couple of times a month and you go to events and you have a job.
Exactly. So I think this could be his carriage clock, if you know what I mean. You know, when people they've done 25 years, they'll get a little gold clock or a pocket watch or something, and it's sort of, you know, thanks for your service sort of thing. This is the ultimate, you know, the ultimate retirement present. So if Henderson wins, then all hell breaks loose in the middleweight division. You've got a vacant title.
Do you think he actually walks away, or are you confident that he sticks to his word if he wins the title and just, as you've said on your show, lays the title and his gloves down in the center of the cage and pulls a Conor McGregor and says, thanks for the cheese, see you later?
The sporting romantic in me says if he was to win,
right,
I'd like to see that happen.
It's the best movie ending possible.
It really is. I mean, you know, people notoriously don't get out of fight sports at the right time. You know, you look through the history of combat sport, it's just littered with stories of people who've gone on for too long and thought, oh, why did you go on there? You know, and you know, Mark Munoz got it spot on.
Right.
He knew what he was going to do. He had the fight. It was Luke Barnett who he fought in the end. Beat Luke Barnett, put the gloves down, said his little piece, and off he went. And it's the perfect way to go. So if Henderson wins, and once the boos have died down, he can say his little piece. I'm sure he'll get a standing ovation anyway, because we've got some knowledgeable fight fans in this country. He'll lay his gloves down, hopefully with the belt, and then say, thanks very much. But he also was talking about continuing fighting after his last fight, and saying, you know, he got a good payday. So maybe if the UFC gave him a stupendous offer to defend once more, thinking, okay, we'll give him someone who
one big
the
payday
off.
Is good, two is better.
Yeah, and also it means that the UFC doesn't have to completely throw all the chips in the air with the middleweight division and end up having to create some sort of mini tournament to decide the champion again. So, which in itself would be kind of cool.
Which would be really cool.
I just think from a purely sporting perspective, this is almost a novelty matchup. It should be Jacare Souza, and I know there's so many great reasons why Dan Henderson has got this fight. One of them isn't because he's the best available contender, and when you're talking about a world championship fight, that really should be the number one criteria. So I'm happy to see the fight because I'm a Brit. Another thing, very quickly, is that knockout from Dan Henderson, in my opinion, set the sport back a good few years in England. Not the punch that knocks him out, the forearm smash afterwards.
The logo shot, as Dan Henderson has now kept it throughout his career.
Yeah, we've got a very prominent sports writer in our country by the name of Oliver Holt was getting interested by the UFC. He was intrigued by it. He wrote for the Daily Mirror, which I used to write for back then. He went to UFC, or either went to UFC 100 or he watched it. And he was so repulsed and turned off by the fact that Henderson knew Bisping was out.
Everybody knew Bisping was out. You could find
like the cleaner who was sort of mopping up behind the cheapest seat at the back of the auditorium. They knew Bisping was out, and yet Henderson still did that massive, which, you know, in especially in this era where we're talking about concussions and things like that, I think the sport needs to clamp down on stuff like that, if I'm honest. I think it's one area of the sport where things need to be tightened up a little bit. I think that really set things back. He wrote a column in his column in a national newspaper and said, I was interested by this, but then I saw that and it's not for me. And I think at that point, there was no national coverage. If that had been a successful event in his eyes, I think we would have seen it take off earlier than it has in the press. So So it's kind of weird for me as well, because back then I was trying to get MMA into the Daily Mirror via the website, and we managed to get it on the website, but I was told there is no way this is going in our newspaper. And you know, had it not been, I don't want to say stigmatized, because you know, a guy reported on what he saw,
right,
and said what he thought, and it's hard to disagree with what he said,
right?
For someone seeing it for the first time, I mean, as someone, I've watched the sport for years, I still hate that forearm, not because it was on a British guy, and I think,
because it's just completely unnecessary, and I think
it's dangerous.
I agree with you with what you said. I agree with what you said of those are the shots that we need to see far less of, and those are the things that, you know, we need referees to be in proper position and react quickly, but it is still reaction and it is still a human interaction. And we need fighters to be more responsible. I mean, I know that the message is fight until the referee stops you, but you know when a guy is out. We've seen enough instances, be it Mark Hunt walking off several people over his career, or just guys that are smart, that recognize this guy's out, they don't need any more, I don't need to throw this. And the counter to that, and sort of the other end of the spectrum, is to me still, and as you said, that Dan Henderson forearm smash where Michael Bisping is 100% done. There is no need for any more shots. I forget who the official was. I want to say Herb Dean.
It was Mario Yamasaki.
There you go. Just not quite there quick enough. And Hendo lands that smash. And I think he throws one more on the ground as well. And it's like, this is just, it's just so pointless.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there was bad blood there and all the rest of it. And it was all, the other thing that left a little bit of a sour taste was the fact that he kind of glorified in it afterwards as well. He was like, you know, the knockout was good, but I think it was the second one that really shut him up and all the rest of it. I'm like, okay. I get it. You don't get on. But...
So for all of those things, that's why I get it. And that's why I understand Michael Bisping's desire to have this fight. My counter and my argument, because I'm 100%, as people that have listened to this podcast or read Keyboard Kimura this week fully know, I am all about the sporting aspect of things when it comes to championship fights and divisional pictures. You've got to keep the title in play. You've got to keep divisions moving forward. Otherwise, it just becomes this weird, stagnant situation where champions are just walking off with belts and divisions are sitting there going, well, what the hell do we do now? You have cases where Jose Aldo's winning interim titles the night that Conor McGregor's supposed to be headlining. But from a like crazy, ridiculous, sure, I get it, Michael Bisping standpoint, I also look at the past 7 years and say, well, this fight's been out there for you a couple of times. Like how come Grand Vengeance wasn't something you needed, say, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago in Montreal when you fought CB Dolloway and were kind of outside of the title picture, and so was Dan Henderson, and that would have been a great fight to bolster that card in Montreal after TJ Dillashaw fell out from a title defense and we were left with DJ headlining against Kyoji Horiguchi. That would have been perfect as a co-main event for that show. But Michael Bisping didn't seem interested. So the timing of it has always seemed, listen, I get it. He's the world champion. He's trying to ride this until the wheels fall off, and more power to him. It has been one of the most enjoyable title reigns thus far that I can think of, just because of the sheer brashness of Michael Bisping. And as he admits to it, he's a bit of a dick. He's a bit of an asshole, and it's fun to watch. But I'm like you, from a sporting standpoint, I think Jacare is the right guy. And I just wonder where this fight was for him 3-4 years ago when it's been sitting there. Where was the, I need to get that one back because it is a permanent stain on my career back then?
Yeah, I think, I think, because I've spoken to Bisping loads of times over the years, and I just don't think he ever saw Henderson as he was moving his way back up. I don't think he ever saw Henderson as someone who could help him move up the division. It would have been a revenge fight and not a lot else. It wouldn't have elevated him. CB Dolloway, all right. CB Dolloway isn't a box office attraction, with all due respect to him. But Siwi Dolloway was a relevant player at the time. He was ranked inside the top 10.
Yep.
So that was a fight that made sense to him at the time. But the whole Michael Bisping story is a remarkable one. And I spoke to Ross Pearson a few weeks ago before he fought Will Brooks, and I asked him about Bisping and whether, you know, Bisping's title win had inspired him. And he said something very, very relevant. And he said, if you look back through combat sports and you look at people who've been knocked out, like brutally, cleanly, devastatingly knocked out, their careers are pretty much finished from that point on. You don't see them bounce back and have any real success, least of all come back and win a world championship. But Bisping's done that. And, you know, the guy deserves incredible credit for the way he's reinvented his game. Jason Perillo certainly deserves an awful amount of credit in that as well. He's brought the kickboxing back out of Bisping, because that's where he started way back when. And he called his shots before the fight.
That's the part that makes it so amazing. Like, you're 100% right. The story in and of itself is tremendous. But the fact that Michael Bisping, the guy that before every fight tells you, tells me, tells anyone that will listen, that he is going to go in there and knock fighter X out, and it never happens, said he was going to do it to a guy that had choked him out in under 2 rounds, and sure as shit doesn't Michael Bisping go in there and knock out Luke Rockhold on 2 weeks' notice in the very first round to win the damn UFC middleweight title.
It was crazy, and I was so fortunate that I was able to be there to see it. I think I was the only British journalist there, because it was such short notice as well.
Right.
And so it was short notice for me as well. I literally rang the office and said, I need to go. I need to go. And they're like, yeah, go. And then, you know, obviously everything happened the way it happened, but it was nuts. Amazing story. It'd be interesting to see what happens in this big fight now.
As you said, love him or hate him, he's a guy that doesn't get enough credit. And I think years on, once he's retired, once he's just Michael Bisping, the Fox commentator, or hey, isn't that the guy that used to be a UFC fighter as he's in, you know, some next movie that he's going to get into, because that seems to be where he's going. He will be a guy that we look back on and say, you know what? We didn't really appreciate this guy enough when he was around, because 10 years as a top contender, as a guy that has been a fixture in that main event, main card picture, is pretty rare in this sport. The only guys that do it are guys that we talk about as legends, and Bisping never gets mentioned in that group. And so if he can defend this title in Manchester, if he can retain this belt, hold on to it for a little longer, I think that's going to further change the conversation about Michael Bisping. Before we get off of this topic, before we get off UFC 204, it will take place. It is a pay-per-view here in North America, which means the start time is the same as always for you, which means middle of the night in Manchester. I know it's been done before in boxing with Ricky Hatton. It was wildly successful. Do you think the late start time or the early morning start time will impact attendance and ticket sales and things of that nature in Manchester? Or is this going to be a huge draw that does really well at the box office regardless?
Well, first thing is, we all believe it's going to be a middle of the night thing, because I know you said at the start of this
nothing
topic
is that confirmed.
It hasn't been 100% confirmed yet. It hasn't been 1% confirmed yet from the UFC. So Bisping, I don't know if he's gone rogue or just got fed up with waiting, but he's put it out there. So we'll suspend everything else and assume that this is actually happening.
Right. And we'll take Michael Bisping at his word.
Yeah, he seems like an honest chap. We'll take him on his word. But no, all joking aside, this in the middle of the night, I think he sells out. He sells out the MEN, no problem at all. I really do. You would think that the UFC will put at least another two decent, really strong fights on the top of that card. I wondered if Ioanni and Jacek versus Karolina Kowalkiewicz might be one of those fights. I know Joanna is far more keen on fighting at Madison Square Garden.
But everyone wants to fight at Madison Square Garden, and not
that's
everyone
be the
can
biggest fight
there.
Card ever, isn't it?
Right.
It's going to be like 35
fights. I talked to a couple of people today and said exactly that. They're going to have 20 or 25 fights because every big name in the sport wants to be a part of that card.
Yeah, it's going to that whole weekend is going to be crazy. I suspect they'll do a double or triple header that weekend, you know. I've just got a feeling that they might just beef that weekend up a bit. But for 204, I don't know what else they'll do on that card, but you would expect there to be at least another big fight on that card, maybe even another middleweight fight. You know, you've got it keeps everybody on the same timeline. It then means that you've got a natural next opponent as well. So we could see Jacare versus Rockhold, or Romero versus Weidman, or, you know, however it might work out. You could imagine any permutation of those four guys, or maybe even stick all four of them on the on that main card. You'd end up with two rematches, which may or may not be a good thing. You could have the two guys who are coming off a loss, Rockhold and Weidman, against each other, and you could have a rematch of Jacare versus Romero, which was a very close fight. And I know the scores were all over the place on Press Row when we watched that. So doing that again wouldn't be terrible. So, and then you'd have a definitive number one contender and the next guy in line after that. So that would make a lot of sense. But in terms of selling tickets, not a problem. We sold out UFC Fight Night in London in 29 minutes, I think it was, and we didn't have a main event.
Without an announced main event.
We didn't have a main event. So granted, it's going to be middle of the night, but for the people who are going to the event, that's going to kind of make it special. It's going to be, you know, these fans are used to staying up anyway.
Right.
But to actually go and be there and to go through the middle of, you know, go and watch an event in the middle of the night and be part of something special. Michael Bisping's homecoming, his first fight as a UFC world champion, as Britain's first UFC world champion. A lot of people are going to want to be at that. The people I do feel sorry for are the Brits who are going to have to watch it on TV, because they're getting zero benefit from the fight being in the UK.
Right.
Because it might just as well be happening in the Forum in LA, or at the MGM Grand, or at the T-Mobile Arena, because it's going to happen, we believe, at a similar time. It might be a little bit earlier. It might be a little bit earlier. But in terms of bums on seats on the night, I don't think you're going to have a problem at all. I think you'll have a packed house.
I think a little bit earlier would be great. I know you would argue for it. I've lobbied for it. I'm so excited that the event coming to Vancouver is a Fox event, because it means it starts relatively early in the afternoon. It means I should be home by about 10 o'clock at night, which is and like done everything by 10 o'clock at night, which is wonderful. I've always argued that they should start a little earlier. I know they tried the pay-per-view thing an hour earlier for about a minute a couple of years ago and reverted back. But it just seems to me like it would make more sense than trying to get everyone outside of the West Coast staying up into the wee hours to watch the most important moments of your event, rather than starting a little bit earlier. And maybe you don't catch as many people for preliminary card fights or even the FS1 sort of prelim main event. But if you get more people sticking around and paying attention for those big fights at the end of the night that are important, that are going to drive sales for your next show, that always seems like it just makes easy sense to me. But who knows?
Absolutely. And the thought of Michael Bisping defending his world title at about 10 p.m. UK time would be
right.
That's the holy grail. We haven't got to that point
right
yet. Or Conor McGregor fighting live at 10 p.m. UK time is perfect. And I think once we get to that point, and I think we're making steps towards it. So we had, you know, we're getting the big fights. We have Bisping versus Anderson Silva in London,
right?
At prime time, but that wasn't on TV. That was on Fight Pass. But under this new deal, that would
be
on TV. That would be great. But in terms of a world title fight, to get a big world title fight on our shores at prime time, that's the game changer. And I think at that point, that's when you start getting the casual fans, and you start bringing people around, getting the beers in, and saying, let's sit down and watch the fights.
Right.
Because it's tricky to do at 5 in the morning when everyone's knackered.
It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Providence Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite with Simon Head of the Sun. And before we let you go, we must take this time to, as we've mentioned throughout a little bit, plug your new podcast. It is a phenomenal show. I'm not saying it simply because you are on the air with me now and because we are friends. Yourself and Sandu do a terrific job. I know you've gotten a lot of great feedback as someone who isn't in the UK market. It's always nice for me to, I appreciate getting a look and a different vantage point of things the way I hope some people that aren't Canadian enjoy hearing, you know, the way I pronounce the word about and things like that. And talk about Canadian MMA. So let people know how they can listen, where they can tune in, what's coming up for the two of you. I know you've got to sort of schedule things a little earlier this week because you're heading out. But plug the show, man. Tell people all about it because it's something that if they're listening to this, it means they like MMA podcasts. So we may as well send some people over to you as well.
Great stuff. Yeah, but if you want to hear some MMA chat from people with funny accents,
terrific,
then please do tune into The Brit Pack, which is this new podcast that myself and Shamat Karsandu have recently got off the ground. We've just this week was our third show, so you're still getting on board early, which would be great. We're hawking ourselves pretty much everywhere, so you can get us on iTunes, you can get us on Stitcher, you can get us on SoundCloud, and you can get us on Acast. All of those different platforms, you can subscribe. You can obviously listen straight from the website on SoundCloud. The best way to get any of those links is to go to the SoundCloud page, which is soundcloud.com/thebritpack. And you'll get all the various links there. Plus you can listen to everything there. Basically it's just me and Sandu, spitballing about MMA, and mostly we're talking about the UFC because that's obviously the big stuff, but we touch on some domestic stuff now and again. And obviously being that we're in the southeast of England, normally in London, it's got a bit of a bit of a British flavor, a bit of a British take. But yeah, it's great fun. We've been talking about doing it for a year, and we finally decided let's just turn the microphones on and record and see how terrible it sounds.
Well, and right off the bat, you guys, I mean, hit some home runs. You talked about the BT deal before it was announced, obviously a big deal. You picked out Mark Diakasi as a guy that the UFC should very well sign. And the following week, wouldn't you know, Mark Diakasi gets signed to make his UFC debut. And for any MMA journalist out there, you talk about Nando's pretty regularly, and that's holy grail territory for MMA journalists that have traveled the world.
It really is. And it's become a tradition. And whenever we get a group of us together and we're covering an event, we'll try and get a Nando's in. A very funny story. We had Bellator came over and did an event in London just recently. The infamous now Michael Venom Page, right. Pokemon, flying knee, fractured skull, knockout.
Face-breaking incident.
It was brilliant and sickening and hilarious for various different reasons, right? Sickening for the injury, hilarious for the Pokemon celebration, and brilliant for the technique. It had a bit of everything there. But the actual event itself was at the O2 Arena. And we turned up to check in. And normally what happens if you check in at these big shows, they have a media room. And if you're lucky, they'll lay on a little bit of food for you. We turned up and we were told there's no press room at the moment. So we've got no food. We're like, okay. At which point they then presented each of us with a Nando's card. So
perfect.
We could all go and have a pre-fight Nando's. That was our official Bellator pre-fight meal.
It's like they knew.
They knew, all right. Yeah, they knew. Because it's the first time I'd met Danny Brenner, who's the PR guy for Bellator. I said, "You've done your research." And he said, "Oh yeah." So we all went and had some peri peri chicken and watched some fights. It was good.
I've tried to explain it to my wife before or to friends before, and it just doesn't make sense to anybody. But for whatever reason, Nando's is just an institution among. We, the MMA media, I'm sure in a couple of weeks when I head into Vancouver and cover that show, I will be grabbing at least one Nando's meal with a couple colleagues and a couple UFC PR people, Matt Redmanovich. who always manages to go home with a couple extra bottles of Nando's sauce as well. So it doesn't make sense to some people, but listen, if you've never done Nando's, just go and try Nando's and then you'll understand. It's fantastic. And in terms of pre-fight food, it's about as good as you're going to find. Like,
it's, yeah,
clean, it's healthy. I mean, relatively healthy.
Nando's is different where you are.
Oh, is it?
You say clean and healthy. We're talking chicken.
Like,
yeah?
It's better. Yeah, but it's better than going and grabbing a burger or, you know, some of the other stuff you could get.
It is. It's, some would say it's peri peri good.
And on that note, Simon's never coming on the show again. No, I kid. As he said, though, and to circle it back around from Nando's to his show, check them out on iTunes. You can subscribe on iTunes. It is The Brit Pack MMA. They're also on Twitter, at The Brit Pack MMA. Definitely a show worth tuning in for. You get some insights from overseas. You get a little bit of a heads up on people to watch for from over there that are doing things in Bama and Cage Warriors that we may not talk about over here in North America just because we're focused on Canadian guys on this show or American guys on other podcasts. And so it gives you a little bit of insight on some of these guys that you may see on some of these European shows coming up, like Mark Diakasey, like Judo Jim Wallhead, who was just signed as well. And they're good dudes. They have funny accents, it's true, but they know what they're talking about. And it's worth you tuning in for. As I said, I'm not just saying it because Simon's a friend and he's on the show, but check them out, The Brit Pack MMA. Plug the rest of the things, man. Tell everybody you do a lot of social media stuff. You have a lot of content that comes out. So let people know where they can find it all.
Yeah, to be honest, the best place to go is just my Twitter feed, which is twitter.com/SimonHead. I've got a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/SimonHeadSport. And I write for the Sun newspaper. You can read all my stuff at thesun.co.uk/MMA. And we're going to be over in Vegas for 4202. We're going to be doing a lot of Facebook Live stuff over there. Going to be shooting video blogs over there. Trying to do a bit more video these days. So we're going to have a bit of fun, shoot some video stuff, and maybe record a few bits and pieces for the podcast as well. So keep him busy. It's going to be good fun.
Simon does a lot of the stuff that I would like to do and has a lot of the setup that I would like to have at Province Sports. So check out his stuff and then feel free to let everyone at Post Media know that you think it is great and that we should be doing the same thing. He and I have had conversations about it a number of times in the past. He is one of my favorite sounding boards. He is one of my favorite people in this industry. He is a good friend. He is a hell of a reporter. Simon Head, thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate you jumping in.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
No worries. That is going to be it for this edition of the Keyboard Kimura podcast. As always, I am your host, E. Spencer Kite. You can follow me and my work at Spencer Kite on Twitter and at ESK Journo on Facebook. No fights this weekend. Enjoy the time off. Settle in with your family. Have a nice relax because we get hot and heavy with more events right through into the middle of October after this. So you'll get plenty of action in a couple of weeks. But for now, enjoy the time off. And as always, be good to one another.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com, follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/KeyboardKimura.